I've always believed that there's an amazing number of things that you can do through a rock and roll song, and that you can do serious writing in a rock song if you can somehow do it without losing the beat. The things I've written about wouldn't be considered a big deal if they appeared in a book or a movie. Lou Reed said that. Rest in peace, man.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Dolly.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I am your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you today. I have a videographer and interviewer, Dave Pruitt. Dave's been around for a long time, since the late 80s in Austin. And he had very popular access shows in the 90s called Capsize and another one called Raw Time. He interviewed tons of musicians, national musicians, local musicians, people appeared on his show. Anyway, he and I were great friends, and I wanted to talk to him about that, just about access television and the switch to the internet. So we have a great conversation. Before we get to that, let me fill you in on what's going on with me. As you know, on Friday, we went to Houston. Skyrocket did. We played at the House of Blues. It was fantastic. Huge show, totally packed, the big main room. I hope we get to keep on playing there because it was a fantastic, great time. I also did an interview, a podcast interview in between soundcheck and the gig backstage with a guy named Dan Workman, who owns Sugar Hill Studios in Houston and has worked with the likes of Beyonce, ZZ Top, and all kinds of people. Anyway. So that show was great. Then Saturday we played this costume ball for Easter Seals. Fantastic show. It was kind of laid out weird. It was there was two bands playing. So we played like 7:30 to 8:30, and then another band played 8:30 to 9:30. Then we played 9:30 to 10. Then we had a break from until like 11:30 when we started playing again. And we were supposed to have food backstage after sound check, and there wasn't. And then they ended up bringing these sliders during the first set and French fries, but they were like freezing cold when we got up there. It was just a little bit of a faux pas. There was a little bit of Spinal Tap stuff going on, which kind of exacerbated by the fact that our bass player Corey Glazer from, of course, the band Sheboygan, author of our theme song, he was dressed exactly as Nigel Tufnel, looked exactly like Nigel Tufnel, and was standing over the cold. The cold sliders and French fries, you know, saying that he's an artist and he'll rise above it. So that was funny. Darren, our drummer, dressed up like the Heisenberg Walter White and was fucking freaky. It was one of the most convincing costumes I've ever seen in my life, and it weirded me out. It made me laugh. He went to play Jesse's girl, and he said this whole funny thing about Jesse before the thing. So that was really funny. Great times. And then yesterday, I got back, and I went to that Rocket Boys show here in Austin at Umami Mia's that I was talking about last week when I talked to them. That was a great show. And then I ended up going to sleep and sleeping like 11 hours. I was so tired. Anyway, that was my weekend. What was your weekend like? All right. My guest today is a longtime video guy from Access Television, and now has moved into the internet world with a great YouTube channel. His name is Dave Pruitt. He has DaveTV.org. He used to be the host of Capsize and Raw Time in the late 80s and early 90s in Austin on Access Television, and interviewed some tons of national bands, had tons of local bands on, and filmed them playing. I was on there several times. He is also the guy that did the last taped interview with Bill Hicks. And you can find that on the internet as well. So anyway, Dave made the transition. I wanted to talk to him about what happened. What was Access Television like in its heyday in the late 80s, early 90s? You remember like the Wayne World kind of, you know, that aesthetic where you can kind of do what you want and do the freedom. And then he moved into the internet. He's still doing stuff. He's still putting it out for free. Content's out there. But he was doing it for free way beforehand. He's always been doing this for free. He's crazy, man. He is a dedicated music fan, and I've been friends with him now for probably over 20 years, and he's a fantastic guy. He still does great, great video work all the time, and you can find his stuff at DaveTV.org. So let's not take up any more time just yakking and talking about him. Here's my conversation with my dear old friend, Dave Pruitt. Let's get down.
Holly came from Miami, so, FLA.
When I zoom through YouTube and I look at all this stuff, I remember seeing when it aired, the Bill Hicks interview was like right when I moved back. Was that like 91 or something? It might have been a little after I moved here.
I think when we did it was about 93, I want to say, right before,
okay,
a couple months. A
couple years
passing,
after I lived here.
Yeah, yeah.
That was his last interview, right?
That was his last video interview, yeah.
How many people like have come to you for that afterwards?
Man.
Like comics, obviously Kevin Booth. I've seen it in that documentary about Hicks.
Yes, sir.
American, what's it called?
Oh, or something American. Yeah, man, I know exactly which one you're talking. I don't keep up too much with all of the documentaries and whatnot, and I guess there's a major movie being made and things
is
like
there?
That. Yeah, yeah, that's what I hear. So there's been a lot of hem and haw about who would play him and who's going to put it out and all the normal things that go with it. So I guess whenever that happens, it's going to be a pretty big deal.
Wow.
Yeah, they've shot, I'm sure, a bulk of it at this point from what I've heard. So
wow. Interesting. So you had a show called Capsize. Was that the first show that you had?
Yeah, technically speaking, Capsize was like the baby. It was the seed that anything else ever sprung from.
And when did you start that show?
Oh man, live show, which is kind of what it, you know, was popular from.
Was the first one was just on Saturdays?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, that's where
so I remember it switched to a Tuesday, right?
Well, and that so was some of the, you know, just because the way that Access kind of blossomed and then unblossomed was very interesting. I actually started in June of 89.
Okay.
Sue Cole from the facility got me into the editing suites with, I had been going to tape band since about 88 on my little camcorder just for fun, and they'd come over and, We'd drink soda and watch them.
Yeah.
And just, you know, in the living room. And then that turned into this big box of tapes, which turned into two, which turned into 10. And I was like, what do I do with these? And I caught like Kevin Roberts' Fillmore Video and Scott Spurlock's Dullavision and all these shows on Access. And I was like, I want to do that. And got in touch with Sue Cole, who took me into an editing bay. And we made these 30-minute programs that ran on Friday and Saturday afternoon as taped programs.
Okay.
30 minutes, which was kind of the prerequisite to cut your teeth at Access to go to the next level.
Yeah.
So that's what happened November 17 of 1990. I went live. So the live show was basically born then. And I remember the first one vividly. I had no idea what to do. And I had my box of tapes there with my favorites. And I had some friends from the back room drop in. And these silly girls showed up with their hamsters. And we took phone calls on naming their hamsters.
That's awesome.
So from then on, though, I believe the first band... I'm trying to think if it was the very first. I know Porcelain Grind, who was in Austin at the Backroom Forever, was one of the first, and I believe the very first to play live. They were like, can we play? And I'm like, well, I don't really know how or what. And they're like, don't worry, just throw up a mic and we'll figure it out. You know, and literally I put up two mics in the room and they brought their PA and turned it up.
Right.
And we went from there, you know, which led to miking the instruments and doing full mixes and everything. So it kind of was born in the mini studio at that time, which, your old band played in that little bitty room.
Yeah. You, it's so amazing because you're a fan, you know, you didn't get paid for doing that. Like,
oh,
I don't get paid for doing this. Like, you wanted to sit down and talk to those people. And I always felt like when I was watching you before I met you or before I was on there, almost like you were like, not even the genre of music, but for all genres, you had all kinds of people on there. But it was almost had that feel of like that metal show. Mm-hmm. Like you and Nathan, right. You watch that show? Like,
absolutely.
Two guys just fucking fans. Like, man, total we're fans. Into this. Like, so you know what I mean? And it was infectious. Just like I watch every episode of that metal show,
mm-hmm.
I watch Capsize.
Awesome.
Like, you know,
thank you.
Every chance I got, I would watch it. I got to tell you something really fast before I forget. Remember the guy that was on Access? He was kind of a preacher guy, but he had a band with his daughters.
The cowboy guy?
He talked about the Beatles and how the Beatles were only good before they took drugs. Okay, so for the last couple of years, I've been playing out at Steiner Ranch. And there's this guy that I was like, I know this guy from somewhere. And he'd come up after we'd do a Beatles song and go like, you know, the Beatles, you know that John Lennon was into Nietzsche. And I was always like, why does this guy give us these weird facts about the Beatles? And finally, it all hit me like a month ago.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sitting there playing, and I'm like, that's that guy.
Yeah, the toilet thing around his head. Didn't he have like the toilet seat around his head on some of his shows? That's what I remember about
Maybe.
The guy
he had
with
a mustache.
The Beatles.
He still looks exactly the same.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And so I went to Benjamin Hotchkiss, who's, you know, from The Real Heroes, and I guess from back then was... Not Bongo Hate. Before Bongo Hate, there was... What was his band?
I didn't know. You know, Benjamin's history, man. I just...
You know them. They used to play at Cannibal Club all the time. I don't know why I'm drawing... The Duck Hills.
Oh, wow.
So anyway...
Right on.
So I go to Benjamin. I'm like, you know that guy that always comes up and talks to us about the Beatles? Do you think... He goes, is he that guy? I've been wondering the whole time if he's that guy.
So wild.
So I finally went up to him about a month ago at Steiner Ranch. And I said, hey, are you that guy? And he was like, yeah. And he introduced himself. So anyway, there
That's
were phenomenons
hilarious.
Like that. Like
yeah,
that
yeah.
people used to talk about. And crazy people. Like, remember Keyboard Ace?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the dial a song, Dick, to the you dial this guy Dick on the keyboards would have the song every day, you know? Yes, sir.
What? Yeah, Austin had a very rich community of acts. Like, kind of like New York. There were real shows that people all watched.
Yeah.
Like Chris Stein from Blondie.
Mm-hmm.
In the height of Blondie's popularity, had a show.
Awesome.
On Access in New York, just kind of like Capsize.
Right
people
on.
Come in, play, talk, crazy
people. That guy's
people.
A real music fan, too, so that's awesome. Yeah.
So, anyway, back to then. At the time, there was how many channels? There's like four channels?
You know, the way that they did it early on, I'm stretching my memory here, man. It was 10... 32 and 33, if I recall, and that's old school. That's going way back. That's like they used to be in the Dougherty Arts Center,
right?
Which is where I took my first course, kind of even back to the 89 time frame. And about 86, I took some courses because I had interest in what was going on with it, and it seemed a little overwhelming to me. So I just like whoa and stopped after I took the courses.
Okay.
And I called in one day. I was like, so I took these courses a while back with it, and there's like, well, after 3 years, you're out of the system. So I was like, oh, I got to do something. And that's where I met Sue Cole and started doing those tape shows. But 10, 32, and 33, which turned into later due to acquisition of the channels by Time Warner and everything,
right.
10, 11, and 16.
Right.
And 10 and 16 were basically the crazy public access stuff.
Yeah.
And then 11 was the crazier religious public access
right,
stuff.
Right, right, right.
I guess piggybacked into that at some point became the Austin Music Network, which people associated with them, although they were a totally separate entity. They jumped on to 15.
Right. But you did a thing on Austin Music Network when it first started.
Yeah. April 1, 94, I was the guy who threw the switch and put the tape on live. And I kind of like the very first time it popped on the air, I was that guy who turned it on, so to speak, while everyone stood behind me going, is it working?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then,
I think it's cool and significant that it was you that did that, because at that time you were a guy out there. There were guys, almost like media guys, like Dale and Bob, Johnny Walker. Jody Denberg, like guys that were very, you saw out at the shows,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Absolutely.
And they were friends with us.
Yeah.
You know? And we were all, I mean, it was like a community of people.
And Jody Denberg and Kevin Connor, two jewels
Kevin
from
Connor.
Back
yes.
in the day, man. Yeah. I remember Kevin was Z102.
Right.
And Jody, of course, with LBJ, and big, passionate fans of local music, you know. And I was just listening to them on KUTX earlier yesterday together, which
really?
Was like, whoa, that's jogging my mind. Jody would know me as Dave from Cedar Park, because I would always call in when I lived in Cedar Park. to Rockline and talk to all the huge stars and, you know, wait all day to speak to Robert Plant or something.
So. Yeah. Did you ever get on Rockline?
Weekly for a while. They would use me in the 94-second Rock and Roll Connection.
Really?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
I listened
school.
To Rockline growing up. I love that show.
Oh, man, religious. Every weekend I would sit on the couch for like 3 hours waiting in queue to speak to whoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a nerd?
Oh, man, I have been that. I think I probably still am. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I am too. I think it's taken a long time for people to be able to figure it out, because when you're a musician and you're up there trying to be cool, people get that, but they don't realize you are just a guy that's waiting to learn something new about some band you might not know, and you know
that and the techno stuff, every cord and cable and mixer that I can get my hands on, you know, and computer element to play with and bring in new media. I'm constantly dealing with that.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you got the live show and you had your first show, you had your friends come in from the back room, then you had to book.
Oh,
in a time when
man.
People didn't have cell phones and there wasn't email, you had to call and leave a message at some dude's house and then wait for
yes.
him to call you back.
Oh, my goodness, man. You know, and my thing, for whatever reason, because I wanted to be fair, became, here's my criteria to play. And if you can meet that criteria, I don't care. Come play. People were like, oh, let me give you a demo tape and, you know, cassettes back in the day, of course.
Yeah.
I have some Johnny Gowdy cassettes.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, that's all fine and good, and I collect that kind of stuff, but it is absolutely by no means your way to get on the show. This is how
right.
you get on, you know, have a PA, show up on time,
yeah.
get a blank tape that we can record it on.
Right.
You're on the show. So I booked bands regardless whether I liked them or didn't like them. I booked bands that I couldn't stand, and it was painful for the 45 minutes they played on the show. But my thought process was, they're in a band, however many people in the band, at least there's that many fans,
yeah.
and they probably have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, so double that,
yeah.
and I'm going to play it, and someone's going to watch my show.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the logic behind most of the bands that played on the show at the time. It grew into, though, of course, pursuing the bands that I liked the most, and I think in the heyday of the show, I was way into the Pariah, Gypsy
yeah.
Rogue, and Near Dark, and all of those things, which kind of became the staple. You mentioned that metal show. Because of my appearance, it was always capsized as a metal show, man. And it wasn't ever really a metal show.
No, I meant it just in the fact that you were a fan,
yeah,
a dude
absolutely.
Sitting there like, hey, I'm just fucking into this. Like, you weren't even fucking getting paid. You were
mm-hmm.
going there every week doing this show.
17 years, every Saturday night, some
for
block
your whole
of time.
Life.
Yeah, exactly.
The existence of your life, your dad slept away. Get exposing bands to a city.
Absolutely, you know, and actually when Will was a baby, the only time he was ever really on the show in that time period, Ed Hamill held him on the air when he was an infant.
There you go.
Yeah, that's quite a long time ago. But you spoke about the Tuesday show, which I think was the one that both of my boys came in and sat in with me on an afternoon. It was early, and they would come hang out while I was doing the show, and they would occasionally pop in on the show and stuff. But
yeah.
That was an afternoon. The Access Studio things, I did capsize exclusively for probably 3 years, 2 to 3 years, and constantly people were calling in, and you know, you'd have Hush Scarlet on and Jason Farmer, but
yeah.
You know, they would call in and be like, hey man, you got any Ministry?
Yeah.
About some Van Halen? And I'm like, yeah, no, we don't do that.
Yeah.
And so it became so much, I was like, well, Dullavision used to do that. What do I need to do? And I actually talked to Scott, who gave me a box of his old tapes, because Dullavision had long gone, and they had, you know, the commercial clips that were played. He had a bunch of Sony Music stuff. And
right.
I just started playing it, and then I got the word that you basically, you know, send a letter to the record company explaining what you do, and that you have airtime, and they decide whether they're going to send you videos or not.
And then you started getting free shit.
I started getting free shit, dude, and it was on. I was like, oh, this ain't too bad. And, you know, any band would come through town, and it'll be like, so could I maybe speak to, and they're like, yeah, what time?
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, how about that? Yeah, sure, you know. I got murdered. One of my first interviews was Jesus Lizard. David Yao took me apart.
What happened? Is it out there?
It was one of those yes-no interviews. Okay. You know, hey, I did my homework, and here's this long question about where you came from and what you did, and Scratch House, it was so awesome. And so, yeah.
Yeah. That's a drag. Yeah. What I liked about your thing, though, too, was it had an element of this where there wasn't, like, the five questions mm-hmm. that you at, like, you're not, like, those radio guys, like, all right, what's the craziest thing that happened to you on stage? I mean, you might ask
that new album.
That. Yeah, yeah. But you had a little bit of a room to stretch and get into a conversation with someone.
Absolutely. We didn't have the time frame to be constrained. Like, to get it in 3 to 5 minutes. Yeah. We were uncensored. I would tell touring bands that came through that, you know, we were uncensored, and they're like, no. And they would just come out and go, fuck.
Yeah.
I was like, you can do that. So, what, you know, the weirdest thing about all that angle was, you know, while you could get naked, you could cuss, you couldn't sell your record. You couldn't say go to Tower. And,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I can tell.
But you could promote the show?
Yeah, absolutely. Just say, we're playing here. You couldn't say, come on out, or the cover is, or...
Okay.
So it was real constraining. While you could do all this crazy stuff no one could do anywhere else, you couldn't do the simple elements of, hey, it's a $5 cover, or it's free, or any of that.
That's weird.
Yeah, it was really
weird.
Why
was that? Do you...
Commercialism on access.
Okay.
Yeah, they were, you know, free. Cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was interesting guidelines to have to live by.
So you started getting... Who else did you get, like, from that time? Did they ever send, like... you know, like a Pearl Jam or Nirvana your way?
I interviewed Dave Abergy from Pearl Jam. The gig at the City Coliseum was...
Yeah, Pearl Jam, Red Hot Chili Peppers, right?
Let me think.
Like that?
Was it Soundgarden? It was very... Yeah, it was Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Smashing Monster Puppets. Magnet, and Swerve Driver.
Okay.
Big A&M thing. And then the funny thing I kind of thought about that is Dave Abergy, I think he was on the first Pearl Jam album. He did a liner for the show. He's like, hey, I'm Dave from Pearl Jam. As long as I'm still in the band, you're watching Raw Time. And like, you know, a month and a half later, he wasn't in the band.
Right.
So those gigs were great. I remember at that particular gig, Nathan, who was doing a lot of the hosting on Capsize with me at the time, took my camera and went in and videotaped Soundgarden doing Devo's Girl You Want during soundcheck, and their manager was all on him going, hey, you can't do this. And he's like, leave me alone, wait a minute. What? You can't do this. Hey, and they dragged him out of there.
Wow.
Good times, you know.
How much guerrilla stuff did you guys do? Did you guys ever go places you weren't wanted with your camera and just go nuts?
I didn't. It seemed like, you know, folks who associated themselves with the show or were associated with the show would tend to kind of do that. Right. I went to the level of get in the creds, man. You can break down all the walls that way. I was lucky enough to get a press pass for the second Lollapalooza. So I was right up there in the pit. The funniest thing, though, when the band started, I didn't really realize that was my first real big press show, so I wasn't quite sure what I could do. And I taped Lush and Pearl Jam from back in the crowd, and I saw people in that pit up front with the photo with the same patch that I had. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And so I went up there for Jesus and Mary Chain and Ice Cube and Soundgarden and Ministry. I wasn't a big fan and probably still am not of the Chili Peppers, so I left when they were playing.
Right.
I liked their really earlier stuff, but what they became was a totally different thing.
Yeah.
So those kind of things blew me away. I went to the Warp Tour with press creds. And
we did a thing.
Yeah,
I just was
exactly.
thinking about this, and I was like, I remember playing the Warp Tour one time and being in a room.
You met Johnny Ramone that day.
I did meet Johnny Ramone that day. You're right.
Absolutely. I remember it.
That's
man.
The only one I ever met.
How crazy.
Yeah.
Dee Dee came up to me while I was record shopping at Sound Warehouse. They were doing an in-store at the Sound Warehouse on Ben White at the time. And I came early again because I'm a nerd, and I was going to get in line and meet him early. And I'm flipping through AC/DC records, and this dude in big leather jacket walks up and is like, hey, that's a great album. And I'm like, yeah, you know, oh my God, that's Dee Dee Ramone, man. And I just geeked out, you know, and he was the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff was because I'm a fan,
yeah.
you know. And but yeah, you know, the I thought the funniest thing, like Warped, you know, Kid Rock was on the second stage, you remember, and no one like really knew. Yeah, he was over on the second stage.
All I remember was I made a choice that day, and there was a meeting the next day about a choice I had made in our set.
Mm-hmm.
that I decided that I was going to start with our 7-minute super slow 6-8 song, just because I was like, how are we going to stand out at this Warped Tour? We're not half as like intense as these other people. So let's do a different thing and freak them out. And boy, we freaked them out. Like, about 45 seconds into the song, the stage was like, no one was in front of our stage. We were on one of like the ASCAP stage or something like that. Yeah, but I remember my manager going like, all right, next day we were like sat down. Everyone's like, Johnny,
in an office somewhere.
Yeah, you gotta really think about this stuff.
We know you're artistic.
Well, I didn't know how to break through.
Right.
And I realized I wasn't angry or crazy or.
That was a hard time to be in music though, man.
That was
and
a weird
you
time.
Had that was the deal on the record label, right? Was that
the music company?
Oh, the music company. That's what. Who did the record? Generic. Yeah, that is something generic like that.
I think
that
that's what they were called there for a little while.
Wow,
I think so. Yeah. I remember a bunch of different names, and then I remember finding out that the real name of the company was GAC LLC because Lars Love blows so much.
That's hilarious.
Such a weird thing to be involved with.
Absolutely.
So, so you did like festivals, bigger shows. Like, did you ever do Ministry when they were here?
I
thought I saw you.
Live footage.
Okay.
And those guys were so high that they really weren't doing any press. They didn't, their label was scared to have them out to speak to anybody, you know? I came a lot closer knowing, Chris later as, you know, a friend. And then, Adam Grossman played in Screw for a hot minute while they recording that album out in El Paso. And that was kind of my closest connections to Ministry. And ran into Al. The thing you may have seen is I ran into Al side stage at the Jim Rose Circus sideshow performance at Lollapalooza. And he did a really cool liner for the show there.
Oh, okay.
He's going to come to your house.
That must have been where I saw him.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good dude. But yeah, they're all high as a kite. So
yeah, I met him one time. He was real freaky. He could just totally gave me like the creeps.
Yeah. It's undoubtable.
Plus, he was like, I used to be married to Tracy. Mm-hmm. And I guess we were just like engaged at the time or something. And like, I turned around, I came back. He's like totally like feeling her up and all this stuff. I was just like, God, dude.
Yeah.
What a gross
one punch, man. You'd have been down.
Dude, I would have been down.
I don't know if he could find you.
I was just like, hey, don't let him touch you like that. Let's go.
Yeah, right. You know, the thing for me that became neat was being able to ask for some of my favorite people when they would come through, which were so far off the map. And that's continued to this day. Like Debbie Gibson.
Yeah.
You know, she came in and was in Greece in San Antonio. She played Rizzo, and I got wind of that. And Sally Struthers was in Greece at that performance, actually, as well.
Who was Sally Struthers?
From One Day at a Time.
No. Who was she playing?
Oh, she was the old lady that did the announcements on the mic at school. So, and I got an interview with Debbie Gibson, which I freaked out for because I was a huge fan. Always liked that pop girl vocal stuff.
I didn't know you were into that stuff.
Oh, hugely, man.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
My
boy is nodding like, too much.
Are you into that stuff too? No.
Definitely not. He's all ska and punk rock.
Oh,
and,
see, that's good.
So, yeah.
Keeping it real. I'm a pop person, but I always thought I was like one of the only people in town.
Oh,
you know
man.
What I mean?
Pink. You know? Oh, Pink's a genius. Yeah.
Yeah. So you still have a show.
I don't have a show per se, see the visual quotations.
Right.
I have never stopped producing music video for live shows. So in 2007, the live show had, for at least 3 years, became nothing but a burden. So like into the early 2000s, it was like the beast on my back. And booking was a pain. I had already pissed off every crew member I ever worked with so they wouldn't come work. And I was
because they're working for free too, right?
Yeah, and everybody saw grandeur because we were what we were at the time. And they're like, oh, I'm going to work on Capsize and I'm going to go to the next level. And I'm like, no, we're doing this for free. And
you weren't trying to? Because I always wondered, like,
no
why
goal.
You never were on radio after that or anything like that.
I had a show on Z-Rock for a minute.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I think I went on there.
Yeah, I think you might have come
Langer
out. That was
have
out
a show
north.
On there.
Who
did Langer have a show on there?
You know
Z-Rock
what he did.
Thing.
He sure did. Yeah,
did
I know you were on
show.
It.
Yeah.
I just don't remember to this day what it was. But yeah, you were on there. Langer had a thing. The precursor to being on the air actually was radio. Ray Segrin and Corey Mitchell had me do the metal show on KTSB. It was at the time.
Right.
And I guess they became KVRX. And but that was kind of like going and play. Well, they were wanting me to play, you know, Immortal and Merciful Fade, and I came in and played like, you know, Extreme and Poison. And
were you into Extreme and Poison?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Uh-huh.
So I thought like you and I think with you and Nathan together and just Nathan's like early 90s moniker, Nasty Nathan.
Oh, dude.
You just always thought like, oh, these guys are tough.
Yeah.
But with Pussycat Hearts.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's, you know, and not that I did, you know, I was at the Ride the Lightning show for Metallica. I loved Raven, Anthrax, you know, all of that early 80s, and a lot of the, at the time was new wave of British heavy metal with Saxon
right.
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I was into that kind of thing, but all those death metal bands, like people call and go, play some Slayer. And I'm like, no, they suck.
Your shirt looks like it says Slayer.
Yeah, and I ripped off the Slayer logo for my
Dave
TV.
TV.
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
Absolutely.
And you your stuff is up there on YouTube.
Yeah, and this DaveTV.org would link to the YouTube primarily, and then I've kind of beefed it up recently and done some reviews and links to photos, so DaveTV.org is actually kind of a site now. It's a baby, but it's okay. It's in work. But my YouTube.com/rawtime, which was the one with the music videos from touring bands and all the Ministry and Van Halen you could eat.
Yeah.
Capsized was so difficult to spell that I just started branding Raw Time because
okay.
you
yeah,
could understand
yeah, yeah.
that and everything. But yeah, that site has got everything from, you know, I think I might have some 80s. I definitely have early 90s on there through current. I did a shoot last night at Execution by Music is a local band that played at, I wanted to say it was Lucky Lounge, and it turned out to be Speakeasy. So
okay.
down there in that district.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, first time I ever shot at Speakeasy, believe it or not.
I haven't been to Speakeasy in a long time.
Exactly. And I'm constantly, you know, I did a shoot the week before in Pflugerville at Hanover's. And
oh, yeah, I saw some stuff with Dana.
Yeah, Dana's on stage again. Isn't that
crazy?
Remote
Generation.
Yeah,
yeah.
With Danheim. So, yeah. So I'm basically, you know, the stuff that we would go out with access in a truckload of gear to do, three cameras, switcher, audio gear and stuff, I carry in a bag over my shoulder now, basically,
yeah.
and, you know, a mixing board under the other arm, and I'm carrying everything myself, little high-def cams, and it's just me again, because, like I say, in 07, I kind of became just me doing this, and,
right.
you know, Chinaman, Kid Walk was our guest in 07, the night that I walked out on the show live, and, like, there was some drama added to make, because I knew
what happened, right?
Well, it was going horribly, you know, and I was the sound man, the host, the director, and
yeah.
I'd have to get up and leave the studio where I was on TV interviewing a national touring comedian friend of mine, and then go throw the switch to go to the tape and come back down and sit down and take calls to, hey, fuck you, fat guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was like, okay, I've had enough. And so I put the hand over the camera, pushed the camera into the wall and walked out. Pretty literally, but I did, like say, add a little drama to that because we were on TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
smart man.
That's when it stopped, you know? But from then on, started amassing my battalion. You know, I'd buy a HD camera when I could. I bought a little you know, 8-track board when I could, and finally got like three cameras together, and I'll tape one to a pole as a wide shot. I'll put one in the drum kit for a drum shot because nobody gives the drummer any love.
Nope.
And then I have my handheld camera, and I mix those three cameras together with the 8-track soundboard stuff that I do and make live videos, and that's what I put out.
That's great.
Oh, it's a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people can see that at Raw Time.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And if they go to DaveTV.org, they can find all that stuff.
All sorts of stuff. Because I got a, you know, being the nerd that I am, I got a little Canon and started doing some stills
right.
and having fun with that. And
it's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you this. When did you feel when they started having, when YouTube became a presence, I guess, 2004, 2005, was that when you realized that this is less people are going to be watching this now?
You know, the thing about that whole deal was I was pushing from late 90s, early 2000s till it actually happened at Access. I was like, look, I've got a laptop. All you need is a phone plug. You plug into the laptop, you put the camera in here, and we're webcasting. We're on live. And they're like, oh, it takes too much, and blah, 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 and would never do it. So the Eden Matrix was a site that was a real supporter of what I did early on and way early in the internet days. And at the time I had capsize.com, back to the difficult spelling and
right,
let that
right, right.
go. But I encoded all of my own stuff to, you know, WMV format and uploaded all that stuff for years and years and years. And until YouTube came along, it was like nobody would come. The bandwidth wasn't accessible. People didn't have fast enough connections. Yeah. No one was going to download a file that big.
Right.
But I've been behind that whole digital media thing for a very long time.
Yeah.
When YouTube came in and became what it became, my thought that was one of the inspiring factors for not doing it on Access anymore was the numbers, because you could see them. You knew exactly how many people were watching, where they were watching from. And it was inspirational to see whatever many thousand people watch a clip that you put up, you know? So that was kind of cool. But then it's become a monster now where everybody's got a YouTube. Everybody with their cell phone puts up a video. And there's a lack of quality control, probably.
Yeah,
It's a fair statement to say the least.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's become more of a positive or more of a negative. It is kind of the only resource right now due to the constraints that I see at Access financially. They've become one of the other driving factors when I left is instead of having a yearly fee, which I could manage out of my own pocket, it became a quarterly fee. And the slot that I had had for 17 years weekly became something I would need to apply for quarterly and either lose or get based on if there was a new producer who wanted it, they could have it because they were new. And so a lot of drama with their regulations at Access made me go, yeah, I'm out. I don't have the energy for this.
Yeah, that's, yeah, you're not even getting paid where you got to like fight for your right to have a show.
Absolutely. And you would. You would absolutely need to pay and fight for your slot. So it became entities like churches and political organizations that had money behind them,
right,
which takes away from the heart of what Access was all about, in my opinion,
right.
That became what you see on there to this day. Now, I know there's still some good music programming. Mad Mexican, Chris Carrillo is a friend of mine, does a show with Robert Smith on Monday nights.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's all about music and local entertainment. So there's some diehard people out there. My buddies in Thunder Rosa played some show that they have webcast on Justin TV. So I know that there's music shows still happening.
Yeah.
But the old Dean Langston, Robert Martin, his Texas Music Show, and, you know, any of these old things, Kevin Roberts, not happening that I know of.
Right.
You know, and I think some of the things, we hit a good time, you know.
Yeah.
Andy Langer was a supporter early on, who
sure
was with the Chronicle at the time, Margaret Mosier. We had that crowd in there for a while doing a lot of good shoots with bands that were of that ilk, to say the least. And I remember the 19th anniversary of Austin City Limits. Terry came up to accept his yearly award and was like, well, we thank you guys for, you know, supporting us every year at Austin City Limits. And I'm glad to take this award. I know there's not a lot of competition, but we thank you very much. As I'm standing out there videotaping his presentation, and I'm like, huh. Next year, I was on that stage with my crew accepting that award in their 20th year anniversary. So we took that award 3 years in a row. I won a couple of Billboard Magazine awards in 94, 95. And that was kind of the peak of all of it. And it was a good thing to do. And I'll never forget it.
Yeah. There's a point where I felt like I would do anything to go on any of those shows all the time. I loved it so much.
Man, I would.
I loved the idea of it. You know?
Bug you to come play because I was a big fan.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
As much as I could get you in, I would. You
I was
know?
Trying to think the last time I was there was like 2002 or something, like right after Gowdy broke up and I was doing some solo stuff, maybe around the
yep
time I was in Endosheen, maybe.
Yep. I had asked you to come do kind of a, what were the things called on MTV? You know, the singer-songwriter, come tell me your stories and play me your songs.
Yeah,
deal.
Storyteller.
Storyteller deal. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That was a fun thing. That
yeah
was really cool. Probably the most, I did a few of those and that was probably the, for me at least, the most enjoyable and successful one that we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had several people come in and do that type of a thing, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, name yours some was more bands that came through that maybe were young at the time and turned out to be more significant.
Blur.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A whole band came in. Virgin. This was 92 in
wow
the mini studio.
Really?
Yeah. They weren't quite Blur in
yeah
the U.S. at that time.
Right.
In Europe, I guess they had kind of reached their peak, and that's what brought them over here. So in their minds, they were stars.
Yeah.
So they came in, and they all sat down, and we mic'd them up and, you know, did the live interview, and I did my research. And I'll admit it was probably a little more textbook interview because I wasn't into what they were doing.
Right.
And it was like Virgin going, hey, will you please have this band on?
Right.
And I was like, yeah, sure. And so it was a little bit, hey, how's your album? How's your tour and whatnot? But their questions were equally, their answers, I'm sorry, to my questions were equally challenging, the good yes no interview.
Yeah.
So I got about three or four questions in, and I was like, all right, so let's check out their video, guys, and thanks for watching Raw Time, thanks to Blur for coming out, here's their clip. We rolled to the clip, and I'm like, get out of here, guys, I'm done. And so I kicked them out.
You're gonna love this. I opened for them at Liberty Lunch, and Jeanette is one of the owners of it. I was like, man, I need some coffee before the show after sound check. And just their bass player was sitting backstage reading. She was like, oh, could just come back here and I'll make you some. And so we went to the backstage room. Guy's sitting there reading. She goes, she doesn't realize that that's a dude from Blur, just a guy sitting there reading a book. And she goes to me, I'm so glad you guys are here. These guys are fucking assholes.
Awesome.
That guy reading a book gets up, walks out of the room, comes back in, sits down, keeps reading his book. And this little guy comes up to me and goes, this is Blur's dressing room, so out of here. And I was like, all right.
Oh, dude, I don't doubt that at all. That's right, yeah. The MO.
When she was
guys,
saying it, I was like, oh, my God. Because I was a fan of theirs, too. I was like, oh, my God, the bass player is sitting right there.
That's hilarious.
Every fucking thing you're saying.
I love Jeanette. That's great. Hey, why not be honest, huh?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I went in and interviewed Belly at the Austin Opera House.
Oh, that's
those
cool.
Girls are awesome, Tanya and everything.
Yeah.
Great band. Love that band. They were opening for a little band called Radiohead.
Oh, I remember that band.
Yeah.
They were popular in the 90s.
Yeah. while I was waiting, they were doing their sound check, and Tom York was just like the mean little girl.
Yeah.
He was just... Everyone in his vocal range was getting a verbal what for.
Yeah.
The band, the house sound guy, the lighting guy. And so you'd experience that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Another very similar story, except they weren't being jerks, is just, you know, I came to interview the up-and-comers. I was never too much into the big guys,
right,
because it wasn't what we... It championed. It was the little guy, you know. So Gary Floyd's band at the time, back in 92, I think, was Sister Double Happiness.
Uh-huh.
And they were great.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were open for this opening at Liberty Lunch for a 3-piece band from Seattle called Nirvana. I don't know who they are.
They never amounted to anything.
No,
they kind of faded out.
They had this kind of catchy sound, but yeah. So I interviewed...
Oh, wait. That's the guy from the Foo Fighters was in the band.
Yeah, that's it. He's in the Foo Fighters. That's the one.
Sorry.
So I came and did my Sister Double Happiness interview. And I just recollect from, you know, them being what they became, all three of them just hanging out and walking around. And, I mean, I didn't know who they were or what they were going to be, of course. And I did my Sister Double Happiness thing, watched their set, and left.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was leaving, just tons of people started coming in. I was like, huh, they have a good following, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, what was it, 2-3 months later, they were all
huge.
Over the radio and huge, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of that, I had a lot of that for good or bad, you know?
Yeah. What all do you have on the YouTube? Do you have interviews with people that, like, significant ones? Do you have, like, early Pariah ones?
Yeah, man. I've got Sims and...
Kyle?
I think
Dave.
It was either Jared, but it was Sims and Shandon and one of the other guys. Dave never came out. Shandon and Sims would always come out. Kyle, not as much, but he'd been out a few times.
Yeah.
They were pretty regulars on the show, Shandon especially.
Yeah.
And Sims would always come out too. And just fun, goofy, you know, never serious. I don't know if I ever did a real serious. We tried to at ARC one time. They were doing the Rattle Your Skull home video.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
I did some stuff there that we kind of sat down and were serious about. But the outtakes, which I have, are amazing.
Yeah.
So Pariah was one of my favorite bands. So they were on every time I would, you know, be able to drag someone down there.
Yeah.
That was always fun.
Chad's band Seed. You guys had them on there?
Yeah, man. They were one of the bands that, while I did like several incarnations of the band, I think I probably had to tell them no more than I had to tell them yes.
Oh, really?
It was like they would have played every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seed, Color, Dig, you know.
Oh, yeah, Dig. That was the first one.
Yeah. And so they, you know, they played many times. I would say we probably have a good half and half ratio for good gigs versus bad gigs on their stuff. A lot of good old footage from them. And, of course, they were one of the bands that came out of Austin with a deal or whatever, you know.
Couple times.
Yeah,
Chad,
couple different
Chad
times.
Chad came out swinging a few times.
Arista, I think it was, and then the Warner Family label that he was on.
Yeah. They had that one record that came out on September 11th, 2001.
Oh, man.
Which is not the best day to release your record.
No. Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I think they got dropped the next week.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, there was
That was Color.
That was Color.
Yeah, because I remember I had a, I don't have it. I realized when I moved to this place that I didn't have it anymore, but I used to have a promo thing that I picked up at Tower Records that was like, oh, it's new, this band and their new album dropped September 11th, 2001. You know, it's going to be the thing. But that didn't happen. Mm-mm. It's weird how outside circumstances. Were there any bands that you saw that you were like, why didn't this band do more?
Oh, constantly good bands. While I'm thinking about the September 11th thing, I actually ran into Joan Jett like 10 days after September 11th, and she was there when that happened.
Oh, wow.
She did a show at Town Lake and gave me some insight to like being there. And Joan Jett was one of the people that I probably did three different things with her during my show, and apparently at the time, and probably still to this day to a certain degree, doesn't do a lot of press. And she called into my show because she was a fan of what I did. You know, we had the video guy in the middle who was a mutual friend that supplied me with videos and let her know what I was doing.
Right.
And she watched, she asked for a tape because she wanted to see what it was all about and watched it and loved it. And was like, yeah, I'll definitely do something with these guys. And called in, and her whole band called in the next week. And the week after that, her manager called in. So they were really good people. And I think she's hardcore, real deal. I'll always support Joan Jett.
Yeah.
But that 9/11, I'll always think about because she had some real touching stories about being there, man. It was quite a time, you know.
Yeah.
The YouTube stuff, though, man, I've got, you know, little, I think that there's some of the highlights out there. I've got a couple Bill Hicks clips up there. I've got my Sammy Hagar interview, my Ted Nugent, my Debbie Gibson, you know.
I love Sammy Hagar.
He's the whitest teeth in rock and roll.
Yeah?
Yeah. I said, that was, that's the first impression I got. I was like, whoa, you know. And something genuine about him was I sat down with my gear and was like, okay, so is anything off limits? I know you and Ronnie Montrose have some background. Right. I want to ask you about Van Halen. He's like, nah, man, hit record. Let's go.
Yeah.
Anything goes. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
And so off we went. And I got everything I wanted to know. And it was amazing.
Did you see, I don't know if it was the last season of that metal show, that he got Michael Anthony to come back on the show? Because when they were interviewing Michael Anthony and going like, so how did you find out that Wolfgang was the new bass player of Van Halen? He's like, oh, I found out like everyone else did in the fucking paper.
That's true.
And did that upset you? Oh, no, I'm cool with it. You know, Michael Anthony's like totally sick. Well, Sammy went back on the show and brought him on there because he wanted to ask him again and he wanted him to be honest.
Right.
Yeah, so they're both on there and Sammy's grilling him. You know, the other three guys are just laughing. But Sammy's just trying to get him to admit that he doesn't like the Van Halen brothers.
Absolutely. That's totally awesome. I mean, Sammy's the real deal.
He's
got a little schmaltzy now, but he's what, like 80?
Yeah, but he's just. I don't think he's anything. I don't think he pretends to be anything he's not.
That's important.
That's the dude.
Yeah.
Pound cake.
Yeah. And that's kind of something that brought people into what we did, like you said. It was we weren't putting anything on. You know what I mean? It is what you saw, whether you liked it or didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd shit a brick to do this kind of thing with Sammy Hagar. Yes. That'd be amazing.
Oh, man.
I've got so many shit to ask that dude.
Yeah. And that's why I was like, is that whole deal? Like, so Sammy's coming through. Could I maybe get a few minutes? Oh, sure. And I was like, all right. And I never, ever write questions down.
Yeah,
it's all off
either.
The cuff, you know? Yeah. And that's the best, isn't it?
That's the only way to go.
I remember Lloyd Maines and Terry Hendrix. I was at the Austin Music Awards one year, just catching who I could catch and doing liners for the show. And I saw them just sitting over there for nothing. I was like, hey, y'all got a couple minutes? I totally had no idea that I would run into them, you know? And they're like, oh, sure. And we went into this room and I just started rattling off things I knew about Lubbock history and Terry stuff and Lloyd's stuff. And this is way before the Dixie Chicks, so it wasn't like any of that had anything to do with it, you know? And at the end of the interview, when we were done, he was like, so where's your, did you plan, you know, any of that? Where's your notes? And I was like, no, man, I just saw y'all sitting over there. I'm a fan. I thought it was great. He's like, that was one of the best interviews I ever did.
Right.
And I was like, oh, Lloyd Maines. Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
so, I mean, see, that's awesome. That's, I think that all those guys appreciate that kind of shit. And the thing is too, is like to have somebody in broadcasting that can create a good question doesn't necessarily mean, like, I'd rather talk to a fan that didn't know what they were going to say, you know, because then you'll have a genuine sort of conversation and they know stuff. They don't have to do, you know.
And it's, you got to be a fan. I, James Lodger, bless his heart, known by many titles. He's the old biddy, you know, the clown. He's had several access shows. He's got the hair growing from his jaws, and you've had to have seen him at some point. He's very crazy and loud. He was my main crew guy forever after Marcy and Dale left the show, which was early days, but he was like my backbone of Capsize. And every year Primus rolled through, Interscope had me come interview Les and the guys, and they were all very cool to me. I got to go to the Family Values tour and meet Buckethead and all those guys backstage, and those interviews were always fun for me.
Yeah.
One year they rolled through to La Zona Rosa, and I couldn't make it. And they were like, well, you do it every year. You have to come. And I'm like, well, let me figure something out. And I sent James out with a camera. I would just go up to Les and, hey, what's up? And we'd go do our thing. He came up to the tour manager and was like, oh, yeah, I'm with Raw Time and we're supposed to do this interview. He's like, okay, wait over there. And he waited for like 5 hours. And then they're like, okay, well, let's go on the bus and do this thing, which is like pitch black, no good videos, you know. And so they walk up on the bus, and I'd given mistakenly, of course, James a sheet of questions to ask. And so he sits down and rolls the camera. He's like, hey, they were with Raw Time, Les Claypool from Primus, and pulls the sheet up to start reading the questions, and Les snatches it from him, wads it up, throws it away, and goes, what's up?
Yeah, exactly.
And James is like,
that's what people like us want to see. That's what, you know.
And so that interview I never used.
At least you tried, though.
Yeah, he was a trooper. He would do anything I needed him to do. I love that guy. He's my boy Will does Rocky Horror every weekend. He's going there tonight. He's going to play Eddie tonight, and he's the head tech guy at the North Alamo Rocky Horror.
Oh, that's awesome.
And James is in that occasionally as well.
People still do that?
Every weekend. It's sold out tonight.
It's been sold out since I was 17.
Isn't that great?
17. That's insane.
Yeah, yeah. And I did North Cross Mall back in our day. So,
Dude, even in Miami, like when I was in high school.
Wow.
And like, you know, all those places, there was fucking Rocky Horror either Friday or Saturday. There's like Led Zeppelin Songs Remains the Same was one midnight show, and then the next night was the Rocky Horror.
And they have some new backup lines. I think they change about it with the times and local, you know, news that's been going on. So it's almost new every time you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wait, is it midnight?
Yeah,
it's still midnight. Wow, that's
people. I'm gonna try to sneak in tonight.
No toast and squirt guns.
No toast, no squirting.
But
Alamo doesn't let us do that.
Oh, okay.
The toilet rolls and you know, all sorts of crazy stuff. You can get a gift bag and get a bunch of, you know, a blow up condom and whatever you need.
Is there anything I'm missing? Raw Time is the YouTube channel.
And Raw Time was, like I say, the music videos that were corporate made and things like that that everyone would call in and request. And it got us all the opportunities to get free tickets and free CDs and into shows and interview all the bands and passes and everything. So that was a blessing in that sense. Opened up a lot of doors for me. It was never where my passion was. That was kind of a have-to thing to open other doors. The Bill Hicks thing you asked about early on, it's amazing how many people all go, whether it be to see the band or run into publicly or whatever, all sorts of, I have no better word than stars, celebrities. I'll just be like, you know, as a fan, hey, I like what you did. Can we get a picture? And they're just looking at me and going, where do I know you? And then it'll be that they watched the Bill Hicks interview. I mean, the craziest amount of people will be like, I saw that, and that's where I know you from. Yeah. So a little backline on that as far as why it is what it is. I give that thing away hand to hand as often as possible on DVD. It's obviously on YouTube for free. Kevin Booth and I did package and sell a VHS for a while, which I find a lot of people have laying around. They'll be like, oh my God, you're that guy. And I have this tape right here in my living room. I've been approached.
Sorry. Access is where I first saw Ninja Bachelor Party.
How about that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, you've been approached.
Approached a couple different times about marketing it. And they wanted to throw me some one-time money and tack it on to the end of another thing as a bonus video at Warner. I don't think it was Warner proper.
Rhino,
but they were
one
the,
of those things. That
yeah, I think it was
Rico
Rhino.
Disc.
I think, man, didn't they stuff? Fold into the same? That's probably
I think so,
minutia,
yeah, but I remember Ryko put out those live albums.
So they wanted to put that video on there, and I'm, as you would probably remember, not in it for the money, and I would always never associate what I did with a payout or whatever. But the contract, so to speak, was as a bonus feature, and I'm like, well, you know, this is Bill's last interview.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a bonus track. I don't really care about the dollar sign. We can negotiate that, but it's not going to be a one-time payout. I'm
right.
giving this thing away, you
right.
know, and they didn't like that real good, but it's mine. So that's what I do with it, you know.
Good.
The Wildlife Foundation doesn't really like that either. They, I was going to print up 20 of them and have them at a silent auction that they were involved with. And they're like, no, don't do that. You can't put it out. I'm like, huh, okay, well, I'll just give them away then. So that's the nature of that Bill Hicks interview. Maybe one day, I mean, I've licensed like 30 seconds to BBC. It's been on one of those major channels in BBC. They did like 4 years on a 30-second clip.
Yeah, you got to do like, I mean, they pay so much reverence to him over there, and he was so grateful to them for...
I should probably also share, Bill was my buddy. Kevin and I would do videos at Access,
yeah.
and I would see Bill over there, and... Kevin and Bill were always someone I could count on for a soda at the picnic table.
Yeah, of course.
During the live show.
Yeah.
So, Kevin was like, can Bill come on? He's got a show at the Laugh Stop and he wants to promote it. And I was like, well, yeah, sure. Of course, man. What did you just come on and tell everyone about it? And he's like, yeah, yeah. So that night, Bill and Kevin pop in and Bill walks in. He's like, hey, what's up? Who's doing the interview? And I'm like, interview? I thought you were just going to come promote your gig. What do you want to talk about? And he's like, well, we could
Letterman.
Talk about my 17 Letterman appearances and where I just got kicked off. And I was like, yeah, right. He's like, no, yeah, 17 times on Letterman. And I'm like, what? I thought you were just this local cat. And I'm like, all right, so we'll talk about that. What else? And he's like, well, we could talk about my HBO special. And I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, no, yeah, yeah, my HBO. And I was like, whoa. So like that night, 30 minutes before the interview, I was... given Bill Hicks 101 by Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
So anything you see on that interview was off the cuff. It was like, as it happened, I knew he wanted to promote his show and I knew he wanted to talk about Waco because he had that rolling
yeah,
clip.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Everything else happened. I think that's the only show that
wasn't he going up to Waco all the time?
Yeah, constantly shooting point. Stuff. Him and Kevin right outside the compound, man, a whole time. Yeah. You know, the only show we ever did that had no... prank calls, like no bad calls. So there was one guy who was just like, hey, play some Wicked Gypsy,
right.
you know? I was
yeah.
like, okay, but we're yeah. here with Bill Hicks, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was like in 40 minutes in, you'll see, I'm like, well, I have bands in the wings. We got to go. Thanks for coming, Bill. And he's looking at the phone. And he's like, I'd like to take those calls. I'm like, all right,
yeah.
pow, and off we go, you know? So it's all off the cuff and as real as it gets. And that was kind of the beauty of what we did in general, I thought.
Yeah. But what a great thing, you know, without knowing you caught something to somebody that isn't like a Michael Jackson kind of person, but to some people, he is more than a Michael Jackson. You know what I mean?
It is crazy.
I mean, he's definitely a lot more famous now than he was when he was alive.
It happens, man.
Because of his legacy.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be able to have had that, capture it I mean, that's a big part. That was a big story about when he died, what was happening with the Letterman thing.
And, of course, he knew what was going on when he came on the show. I think he might have shared it with Kevin, but he didn't. No one knew how quick. And he did our show. He drove to Florida, did his last couple stand-up shows. I think he did one or two radio interviews, but that was his last video interview. Right. So it's real special to me. And
Did you go to the Laugh Stop that night?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it a good show?
Oh, it was great.
I never saw him.
Oh, he was awesome.
Yeah.
He could handle the room like nobody's business, man.
No, he's amazing. I'm such a huge fan, and I hung out with a lot of comics in Houston, like in the late 80s before I moved up here. And that's why I remember that interview and watching it, because I was like, oh, here's this guy that all these comics, they were like, it was like if you were a guitar player in Austin and you had to deal with Stevie Ray in 83. Sure. And like, yeah, he's playing with Bowie. And what am I, chop liver here? That's what all the kind of like the comedians there were like, well, fuck Hicks.
That's
so I was
funny.
Like, who is this guy that's just totally like schooling everyone?
Yeah.
And when I watched it, I was like, I realized he was so serious too. It's not like a funny
Mm-mm.
interview at all.
Mm-mm.
But I liked him a lot.
And people were calling him in, asking him like Noam Chomsky stuff, you know?
Yeah,
it was
It
wasn't about ha-ha.
No.
It was public commentary, you know, political commentary. Steve Hicks, his brother, has a group on Facebook, which I recently discovered, and has opened the door to kind of some really great conversations with other comedians and like-minded people. So that was really cool. Like just a couple of months ago, I ran into that.
That's awesome. What does that say?
It's on Facebook. It's something about Bill Hicks. I'll share the link with you so you'll have it. But it's pretty neat. I think it's pretty secluded. It's not like you can really find it. Someone invited me in and all of that. But it's pretty cool, man.
I want to get Kevin on here to talk about his drug movies.
Yeah, he is mostly out of L.A., I guess. Yeah. And I know he's trying to get another visit down here to Austin. We haven't seen each other in a long time, but we always talk on the Book of the Face.
Yeah.
So he's a good guy. I've always stayed in touch all these years, and he's done a lot of amazing things. He's very much
amazing
concentrated
things
on the how the weed won the West and legalization.
You know,
I watched that
documentary on cable, and does he ever show up in it? Is he ever really in
you know
it?
I haven't really
I don't think he's in it.
I think I might have championed that cause at one time. I've been so far removed for a while.
Yeah.
I don't it's whatever.
Right. No, I just watched it and I thought like, wow, what an amazingly powerful movie. Here's this guy talking about his family, you know, like, oh, they're all this weed's illegal. But then here's these cats that are drinking and, you know, they're drinking themselves to death and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember if I saw him in the movie and was like, holy shit, this Kevin. Or like the end is like directed by Kevin Booth. I was like, what?
Absolutely.
What?
Right. Isn't that great?
Yeah. Really happy to see that.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
He's definitely been able to open some doors.
Yeah.
So it's awesome that he's still out there doing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that that technology didn't phase guys like you and me out. We're still in there. You're still making content, which is really important. Some kind of allergy attack is coming over me. Stopped up as we're going on.
Yep.
But I want to thank you for coming on. And I want to thank you probably on behalf of all of us guys from the era of Capsize and Raw Time. Like, thanks for having that show and giving us the outlet.
It's a blessing.
Thank you as a fan from me watching that show. I got hours of entertainment I'll never get back, but I'm glad.
And you know, Danny Crooks. We booked you at Steamboat way early on before you had your weeklies there.
Yeah. That's one of the very first things we did there.
Yeah.
Was your show.
Absolutely.
Because I remember doing an interview upstairs.
Yeah, man.
And then, yeah,
that's
I totally remember
back
that
in the day. Absolutely.
Long time ago.
And let's see, that was the Anar lineup, right? And
that was the original Mr. Rockabilly, like Brian Keeling.
It was. That's right.
Richard Weiss, this guy Brad Siegel.
Absolutely was. Yeah. And then the other thing was during South By at Steamboat after you'd had some time there. That's what that was.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember both of those videos vividly. They were pretty good for us, at least. I was never a guy who could. I'd play something for someone and go, this was like the greatest thing I ever did. And they're like, oh, I'm so out of key or tune or whatever.
Right.
I'm like, I don't know. You know?
I could just, and when you posted that Mr. Rockababy stuff, whenever you did, it was just hysterical to me. I can't remember what I was thinking when I got dressed.
Yeah.
Whenever I see pictures, I'm like, what was I like? I was like, oh, just a vest with no shirt and this top hat with these tights with flowers on them and army boots.
It works.
This is my scene.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. In the 90s, everything was cool.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much,
thank
Dave.
You,
thanks,
Johnny,
for coming in. I've been wanting to have this conversation for a long time.
Absolutely.
And thank you for indulging me. And
oh,
thank you for everything that you contributed to music and to visual art.
Oh, man, I hope to be able to continue to do so for some time.
We
so thank
will.
You.
Thanks, man.
She was given head, she says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side.
Wonderful guy, Dave Pruitt, man. He's given a lot to this music scene. And I'm glad that I was able to sit down with him and have that conversation. He's been a dear friend of mine for many years. Great guy, fantastic supporter of music. God bless him. Get out there, look him up. DaveTV.org. Did you notice how stopped up I was getting at the end of that thing? I was starting to have an allergy attack as we were talking towards the end. Got super stopped up. It's been happening to me lately, and I've been taking allergy medicine. What the fuck is going on out there? Rest in peace, Lou Reed. Everyone get out there and check out Dave Pruitt's stuff. When you're out there on the internet, get on your iTunes, go to the iTunes store, subscribe to this podcast, rate it, and leave a comment. It helps us with our advertising, and it helps us with everything, helps us with our numbers. If you'd like to get more involved with this podcast, you can go and like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here, and you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy, okay? Dave Pruitt, thank you for coming, man. I love you. Keep on making videos, and here's some more Lou Reed music, man. Rest in peace, Lou Reed. We love you. Really. Bye, Lou Reed.
Satellites gone up to the skies. Things like that drive me out of my mind. I watched it for a little while. I like to watch things on TV. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite of. Satellite's gone way up to Mars. Soon it'll be filled with parking cars. I watched it for a little while. I love to watch things on TV. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. You've been bold with Harry, Mark, and John. Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday through Thursday with Harry, Mark, and John. Satellite's gone up to the skies. Things like that drive me out of my mind. Watched it for a little while. I love to watch things on TV. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite of. Satellite of love. Satellite.